Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, January 13th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 55 minutes or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with us here as we take a look at the college football national championship game between Clemson and LSU, the final college football game here of the 2019 season. We'll go in depth on spread, total, and the different prop betting options that are out there. And we'll also talk some college basketball during our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. And obviously, as you know here, with it being a Monday, professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com will join me here for the full show to kick off this week on Bang the Book Radio. Over at bangthebook.com, I've got prop stuff up. I got some generic prop betting tips and also the things that I've actually played here already for the national championship game posted over there. Got a game preview for you. Got some prop write-ups from Charles J. We've got some system pick stuff from Alan Moody. Lots of stuff for the national championship game posted over there. Also an opening line report for the conference championship round of the NFL playoffs, which is coming up here on Sunday. Daily NHL, NBA, college basketball, all sorts of stuff going on. Just head on over there and check it out. I promise you won't be disappointed. And of course, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest to chat college football and college hoops with me today. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going well, man. Pretty good Monday morning here. Big game tonight. Here we are at the final game.
Yes, sir. Here we are at the final game, national championship. The Tigers will win. Just depends on if it's Clemson or LSU here in this one. And if I sound a little bit jumbled here this morning, it has been a busy-ass morning, man. You know, a lot of the prop betting stuff not posted early on, which is remarkably frustrating to me. You talk this thing up like it's the Super Bowl. They got, what, 16 days between the semis and the national championship game. And books still unwilling to put themselves out there with these low limits on the prop bets. A lot of stuff going up over the weekend and here this morning. Massively frustrating for both of us.
Yeah, it is. Because, we figured last week that everything would be up. Plenty of time for us to talk about it here today. And here we are late Monday morning and still not that much up. It's pretty surprising. Like we were talking here beforehand, it's not like they couldn't plan for it and there was plenty of time to get ready. So a little bit frustrating. It makes this morning a little bit more difficult to talk about too many of the props, but we'll do the best we can.
Yeah, that's all we can do here is do the best we can. I mean, you know, I feel like last year, I mean, we had individual defensive player props. I feel like we had a lot more stuff for Clemson and Alabama last year. And, you know, I mean, I guess stuff will get posted throughout the day, but, you know, obviously very tough for us to talk about those types of things here on today's show, and tough to write about them as well. But before we get into the prop stuff here, Kyle, we did touch on this game a little bit last week, as you mentioned. LSU -5. This one came off of 5.5 over the weekend. And also, too, the total now coming down a little bit, as low as 67.5 out there.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting to see the line movement here. One thing I did want to point out about the side here, and this is pretty much tell you everything you need to know as far as where the sharp money is, where the public money is. You got a 5 at Bookmaker, 5 at Pinnacle, Bovada at 6.5, MyBookie at 6.5, LSU -115. So some pretty interesting odds there. Clearly the public side is LSU, Clemson the sharp side in this one. I can't disagree with that. You know, this is one of those where, you know, as we talked about last week, this is a really big reaction to one game. And, you know, I feel like this is one of those games where, you know, if you take Clemson and you lose, you say, you know what, this is the type of bet that wins 55% of the time. You know, these are the types of reactions, overreactions to where I have to bet it. If it loses, it loses. You know, I can feel good about the fact that, you know, I have to fade an overreaction of that type. So while it certainly could lose and LSU could win this game by 14 points or more or something like that, I do feel like Clemson is the right side when it comes to, you know, not overreacting to one game you just saw.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Again, I mean, like we talked about last week, coming into the semifinals, even with LSU and the opportunity to play here in New Orleans, very close to Baton Rouge, obviously, as Dabo Swinney told us over the weekend, because, you know, he had to. I had Clemson minus one, you know, coming into this hypothetical national championship game. It's 6 points off from my number based on what we saw in the semifinals. And again, I mean, yeah, LSU took Oklahoma to the woodshed. Oklahoma wasn't that good of a football team. We knew that over the course of the year. I talked about it all the way in the lead up to the semifinals. They'd play one good half. They'd play one bad half. They struggled both times with Baylor, lost to Kansas State. Oklahoma just wasn't that good of a team. Clemson played, in some people's minds, the best team in the country in Ohio State. And if Ohio State wasn't number one, Clemson was number one in a lot of those people's minds. So massive overreaction here, to say the least. I grabbed this one of the rogue 5.5s here this morning. I was hoping for a 6. We never really got one. I'm not posted up at Bovada, so I'm not taking the 6.5 there. But I may even play some alternate spreads here on Clemson. +4, +3.5, +3, stuff like that. And again, I mean, this isn't because I'm in love with Clemson. I think that they do ultimately win the game. I will have a small piece of the money line here. But again, just a massive overreaction to what this number would have been. And if I get caught with my hand in the cookie jar here and my pants down, you know what? Props to Joe Burrow. Props to Ed Orgeron. Props to LSU for what will have to be a great performance tonight.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, the fan side of me, I would like LSU to win based on, you know, what happened in the last game. And also, I am rooting for Joe Burrow. He's likely to be a Cincinnati Bengal next. Obviously, he used to be a Buckeye. I like Burrow. I like LSU in general, what they've done. I think one thing that should be pointed out is some people have said in the lead up to this game, I've seen this on TV and some of the obviously very deep analysis there. You know, it's one of those spots where they've been using Clemson's last game against them. You know, Clemson did not play their best game against Ohio State, or Clemson wasn't very impressive. Ohio State was a really good team this year. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Buckeyes fan, but Clemson played an excellent team. And it may well be that Ohio State was the number one team. And, you know, they were power rated number one by many people for a lot of the season. So the fact that Clemson didn't look great against Ohio State, I don't think that should be a huge knock on them. You know, Ohio State's just that good, especially compared to Oklahoma. So, you know, there's a lot of difference between those two teams. And I think Clemson may be getting discredited a bit too quickly because of that performance.
Yeah, I think so too. And again, like I talked about, and we'll transition over to the prop side of things here. You know, like I talked about, one of the props that I'm kind of looking at here, this is sort of my long shot prop, is the double result prop. LSU leads at halftime, Clemson wins the game. And that's at +800. You can find that at BetOnline, also over at DSI. And the reason being, think back to that semifinal game. Clemson had a hard time getting up to the speed of that game, getting up to the talent level of Ohio State, getting up to a planner and a preparer like Ryan Day with the athletes at his disposal. Ohio State should have put that game away in the first half. They should have been up 28-0 at the break, maybe 28-7 if you give Clemson that pick six. But it was a situation where Clemson just kind of had an adjustment period there. I think the same could be very possible tonight. If that does happen, you know, and I did take a Clemson position pre-flop, you may end up getting Clemson +8, +8.5, something like that from a live betting standpoint, because I think there is a possibility that it does take the Tigers, the Clemson Tigers, that is, a little bit of time to adjust to this game, to that LSU talent level. But Brent Venables makes adjustments, man. Jeff Scott, Dabo Swinney, they make adjustments. You don't do what Dabo's done as an underdog in the playoff semifinals, in bowl games against elite teams, without the ability to adjust. So that could be a possibility here tonight, and that is kind of my long shot prop here. If LSU rides the wave of the crowd, goes out there, Burrow puts on a show in the first half, you damn well know Clemson's going to adjust, and I don't see Clemson ever being out of this game. Much like the Ohio State game, I don't see them ever being out of it. So LSU first half, Clemson second half at +800, something I just went ahead and took a little bit of a shot on.
Yeah, I think that's definitely worth a shot because, you know, who's better at adjusting than Brent Venables? You know, I think that LSU's offense is more likely to have success in the first half than the second half, in my opinion. You know, that's why, well, sometimes I like to take unders early on in these championship games. I wouldn't like the under early in this game. And I will say that I would lean to the over on the total here. And I put up a free write-up on bettersportsfix.com about what exactly my number was and my thinking for why I didn't end up playing the over, but I do still lean to the over. I think that LSU is more likely to start out quick than is Clemson, partially too, because Clemson has played such a bad schedule throughout the course of the season. You know, this is a Clemson team that's really played a weak schedule, but once they get into that game, they get a little bit ways into playing that really tough opponent. They're more likely to rise to that level, and they have just such good coaching. I'm not saying anything against LSU's coaching, very good coaching staff, but you know, I don't think anybody's coaching staff is better than Clemson. So I like that as well. I think that, you know, LSU being ahead in the first half and Clemson winning the game overall would not surprise me at all. So plus what is 800? Yeah, that's a good, I think that's a pretty good price.
Yeah, I thought it was worth a shot. I mean, again, you know, you're not looking to go nuts with a lot of these props and some of these exotic bets and stuff like that. You know, you take your bigger positions on the things that you're more comfortable with, like something like a side and total here for this game. But I do think that there are some opportunities out there. And another one that I kind of took a look at here, and this one's only available at five dimes based on what I've seen. The wording on this prop is absolutely asinine, but it's LSU two timeouts remaining first. So basically LSU calls the first timeout between the two teams. I don't know why the hell it's not just first timeout. Clemson minus 110, LSU minus 130. This one was actually minus 120 earlier on. Maybe I'm out there moving lines or something like that. But, you know, my thought process here is, you know, we talk about Venables and we talk about him and his adjustments, but also something that makes him so good is that he has the personnel on defense to confuse the opposing quarterback. The back seven for Clemson, very, very versatile. Simmons can line up in coverage in the slot, in coverage on the outside. He can play safety. He can rush the passer. You can put guys like Tanner Muse in different places. You've got the odd fronts for Clemson, the unbalanced fronts that really bothered Ohio State in the second half of that semifinal game. They give the quarterback a lot to look at pre-snap. And I think Joe Burrow, even though he's such a cerebral guy, even though he's such a smart quarterback, it can be tough here in a game of this magnitude. So I think even though people will look at this game and say, well, Clemson's going to call the first time out because it's going to be such a pro LSU crowd. Yeah, that could be the case. But I think what Venables does, disguise coverage, disguise blitzes, give Burrow a lot to look at with those pre-snap reads, those pre-snap matchups. I think LSU to call the first time out makes a lot of sense here. Again, I got it at minus 120. It's now minus 130, but I still like it there.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a real strong opinion on that one in general. I do think it's interesting that, you know, the wording of that one is who has two timeouts left first. I mean, unless somebody's given four timeouts to start with that we don't know about, you know, it seems like it would have made more sense to word it differently.
Yeah, I don't get it. Whatever. Anyway, so what are some prop bets you're kind of taking a look at here for the big game tonight?
Well, I'll tell you, I've only bet one here so far, and that was ETN, Travis Etienne, over 138.5 rushing and receiving yards combined. This was minus 120 yesterday on five dimes. It's now minus 140. I like it less at 140, obviously. I like it somewhat. You know, I think that the way that last game played out with Trevor Lawrence running the ball so much for Clemson against Ohio State, I think they did that because they knew Ohio State was going to be keyed in on the run game with ETN, and Ohio State's a tough team to run the ball on, just run it up the middle and try to beat them that way. It worked, you know, Trevor Lawrence running really worked out well. I would be surprised if Lawrence runs quite as many times as he did last game. I certainly think he'll probably run a few times, but Travis Etienne's been really good throughout the year, and he's a guy that can make people miss, very good at catching passes out of the backfield. I think Lawrence could be looking to him a good amount here tonight with, you know, LSU's going to be dialing up some pressure. LSU has very good safeties. I think that ETN getting some dump offs is very likely in this one. And I do think that he'll get some big runs as well. You know, this is a Clemson offensive line that's been very good this year. LSU defense has done pretty well against the run, but they're not as good against the run as Ohio State, certainly. I think that Clemson will at least try to keep the run game going, and you would think it makes a decent amount of sense to try to keep Burrow and LSU on the sideline. to run quite a bit. I think ETN will get quite a bit of action tonight.
Yeah, you know, along those same lines, and in fact, of course, as I'm looking here, DSI wound up taking this one down. But they had Travis Etienne at 3.5 receptions over under the over minus 135. As I look out there at Bet on or at Five Dimes, excuse me, it's 4 with the under juiced a little bit. But I do think that Etienne is a massive part of the game plan here tonight for Clemson. So if you find a reasonable one, and you know, Bet Online and DSI both have their player prop section, you should be able to find Etienne receptions there. I think he's a big part of the offense tonight, as you just mentioned. So if you want to play him for yards, for the total yards prop over at Five Dimes, you want to play receptions, I think both of those are good. LSU's really aggressive defensively. They like to pressure with their linebackers. They like to send, you know, some safety blitzes, stuff like that. They're willing to trust their corners on the outside. And I wonder about Trevor Lawrence's trust level in T. Higgins, in Justin Ross, in some of those guys on the outside. They weren't good against Ohio State. And LSU's talent level, specifically the cornerback position, is on par with Ohio State's. So I wonder about Lawrence's trust level in those guys to get separation. They got very little of it against Ohio State. And both of those guys, of course, banged up in the semifinal game as well. I think Lawrence uses ETN a lot. I think he, whether he has to as a safety valve with pressure or just because it's a big part of the game plan tonight for Jeff Scott, I think ETN's fingerprints are all over this game. I like the over yards you mentioned. I like the over receptions. And I even took a little bit of a smaller shot on first touchdown at plus 500.
Yeah, and I mean, even receiving yards over 44.5 makes some sense too, because you know, if you like over 3.5 or over 4 on pass receptions, and you think he's going to be a big part of the game plan, probably over 44.5 receiving yards at even money or minus 110, I should say, at Five Dimes, I think that makes sense as well. I do think that ETN will be a much bigger part of the game plan than he was last game against Ohio State.
And again, I mean, you're thinking about these player prop things in terms of game flow, how you expect this to go, which matchups you think these coordinators can look to exploit. And both of us think that ETN is one, you know, and the tough thing here is, you know, you look over and a lot of people love to play overs on player props in the Super Bowl, national championship. They're going to see Joe Burrow. They're going to see Burrow putting up 400, 500 yards a game. They're going to want to play the overs, but which LSU receiver gets the most targets? You know, who draws the best matchup here against this really good Clemson secondary? I don't know. Because, as we talked about, Venable's so flexible, so versatile with the guys in the secondary, I'd have a hard time betting any Justin Jefferson over, any Jamar Chase over. Maybe it's Terrace Marshall. I don't know. Maybe they use Thaddeus Moss a little bit more here in this game. The problem is, I just don't know. I think ETN has good matchups and the middle of the field will be vacated with some pressure. I don't know which LSU guy I would want to highlight. So you stay away from.
Yeah. I was going to say that the LSU receiver yardage props are pretty ridiculous. I mean, you know, Chase at about what, 99.5 or 100, Justin Jefferson at 100, 99.5 minus 105 on the under at Bovada and minus 135 on the over. It's hard to take an over at a number like that. You know, we don't know how one game will go versus the next as far as, you know, if you have good pass receiving options like Burrow does, certainly one guy will have a pretty good number in this game, but it's hard to say who that will be. I think it's a little better to look at Clemson and say ETN wasn't a big part of last game, and I think that's helped the number be a bit lower than it would have been. Like you, I like to try to look at some of the under props, especially in the Super Bowl. Obviously, as we just mentioned before, we don't really have near as much to look at here for this game. But in general, I wouldn't go crazy with the over props, even though I kind of do lean to the over in this game. Usually these over props are pretty pushed up there pretty high because that's what everybody wants to bet is the over.
Yeah, I'll throw one under out there. I think Edwards-Helaire under 96.5 rushing yards is a decent look tonight. I mean, you know, again, he should be healthier than he was against Oklahoma, where obviously they didn't need him in the Peach Bowl anyway. But despite what J.K. Dobbins did to Clemson despite what Dobbins did, it's still very, very hard to run on Clemson. I think as much as I've talked up the back seven for Clemson, in particular the secondary, I still think LSU has to move it throwing the ball. So I don't really like Edwards-Helaire as a runner. I think it'd be more effective as a receiver in this game, but I do like the under 96 and a half rushing yards for him. That's minus 117. And part of it to me here too, is that he only had two games this season where he went over 97 yards with under 15 carries. One was Vanderbilt and one was Florida. I don't think he gets a heavy workload tonight, which would require him to have a very high yards per carry. If he breaks off one run and it kind of busts up this prop, it is what it is. But I just don't think he gets the workload and the volume to get up close to 100 rushing yards tonight.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would rather take the pass receiving, the receiving yards for Edwards-Helaire over 53 and a half than I would take the rushing yards over. If you remember too, Dobbins was wide open out of the backfield a lot against Clemson. I think that Edwards-Helaire will probably have a pretty good game when it comes to pass receiving. I think it's a little less likely that he gets a bunch of runs. Like you say, obviously if he breaks one for 70 yards or something, you're going to lose, but you take that chance on props like this. And I would tend to like the under on that one as well.
Well, and just as a side note here, you know, to circle it back to that Fiesta Bowl, you and I talked about, I mean, J.K. Dobbins is a damn good running back. He's a dual purpose threat. You know, I think that he may have been as good as Ezekiel Elliott was for Ohio State in a lot of different ways. But you and I talked about the just enormous drop-off between Dobbins and Master Teague. The drop-off between Dobbins and Edwards-Helaire is not the same, but Edwards-Helaire is not J.K. Dobbins. So that's something people need to keep in mind here, too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he, you know, obviously he's not Master Teague, but he's also not J.K. Dobbins. So I think that, you know, there is a drop-off there. And LSU likes to throw the ball. They have plenty of options in the passing game. I think that they'll throw the ball quite a bit here. You know, I think that's probably still their best chance to move the ball, like you said. I'll ask you one here real quick. What do you think of the Trevor Lawrence rushing yards? I see 52 and a half is what it's set at. The under's got some juice on it at five dimes. I know a lot of people will be interested in that one. So what do you think of Trevor Lawrence rushing yards?
You know, I think it's tough because, you know, we saw obviously Lawrence do so much with his legs that game in the Fiesta Bowl. And like we just talked about with ETN, the fact that he wasn't really a focal point has probably kept his numbers a little bit on the lower side here from a prop standpoint. I think when we talk about Lawrence and what he did, you know, in the Fiesta Bowl, I think it's kind of inflated this number a little bit to the point where I'm not sure I'm too interested in taking it. And I will mention this. Last year's national championship game against Alabama, obviously a Clemson blowout, so Lawrence didn't have to use his legs a ton. The rushing yards prop in last year's national championship game, the line was 14 and a half. He went over, he had 27. It was one of my favorite prop bets and it did cash, but it's a big adjustment year over year. As much as I think he could be a focal point, you know, from a running standpoint, that line's just too inflated for me to take it.
Yeah. I would take the under if I was taking that one. I think that, you know, it's just such a big adjustment. If he breaks a huge run here, then you're going to lose, like we said, but on the other one, but you know, I don't think it's likely he's going to get a 70-yard run here. And I don't think that Clemson probably wants him to run as much as they did last game. Like I said, I think ETN's likely the focal point. And, you know, while some people would remember what they just saw in that last game and want to take the over on Lawrence rushing yards, I would be hesitant to do so. I would lean to the under.
Well, and I remember reading right after the Fiesta Bowl, I think it was over at The Athletic, something about Trevor Lawrence was watching game film with the backup quarterback, or maybe it was Jeff Scott or somebody, and they noticed that they could run with the quarterback on Ohio State's defense because of that, you know, really heavy pursuit that they have rushing the passer. That was part of the game plan. That was something that they wanted to incorporate. Now that LSU has seen it a little bit more, probably something that they don't want to incorporate as much. So again, ETN, your safety valve there. So I think that makes a lot of sense. There could be a correlation there between Lawrence under rushing yards and ETN all-purpose yards, receptions, stuff like that. Maybe yep. It's one where both of them come in together.
Yeah, that would be my lean as well. I think that makes sense. If you think ETN's going to be such a focal point, likely Lawrence takes a bit of a backseat, at least in the rushing game.
All right, so let's talk for a second here as this is our college football last look, our final look here at the 2019 season. I always like to ask this question of my guests, and I'm going to go ahead and pose it to you here on today's show. As we take a look back at the college football season as a whole, What worked for you? What didn't work for you? What are you going to look to incorporate, you know, for the next season here? As, you know, again, win totals and games of the year are not that far away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wish I had gotten to work a little bit earlier on win totals. I did do extremely well on the win totals that I played. I wish I would have played more of them and been able to get on those earlier. It's something that you and I have talked about before, that the time that those are put out is so much earlier than it ever used to be. I'd like to be more ready for that this coming year, and I think I will probably bet more of those. As far as the game-by-game plays, I finished the year, or I'm at this point, I guess I should say I have one play left here, but 13-13 on sides for the year in college football. And on totals, I was 62-46. So this is a good year for me, you know, 75-60. I'm never going to complain about hitting 55%. I do wish I had played a little bit more volume. I've been a little bit shy to play as many games as I used to, partially because I know that it's hard on clients to have, you know, you're going to have more swings when you play more games. And, you know, I get this pretty often in college basketball. You know, I pick 13 or 14 games when there's 150 games to pick from. And people say, what are you doing? I mean, this is too many plays. But, you know, if you think in relation to how many games there are, you know, it's not as much as if you play three or four games when there's, you know, 30 games to pick from in a slate normally. So I think in college football, I would probably like to play a little bit more volume next year, because I feel like I do have edges, especially in the totals market, to where I'd probably like to play a little bit more than what I did this year. So I'm probably going to go a little bit heavier on the volume, like to get a little bit earlier on the win totals. But in general, I'm happy with my season this year.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, it was tough because I started out really poorly in college football. Things got a little bit better as the season went along. I had a hard time separating the bad baseball season that I had from the start of the college football season. And just overall, in general, I need to just take a different perspective here. You know, a lot of times it's, you know, oh, what's going to go wrong next? I know a lot of people that had a very bad college football season. A lot of closing line value didn't work out. And that shit, that permeates everything, man. I mean, that poisons everything that you do here in this business. And that's something that I have to really focus on. If I have another bad baseball season, which obviously I'm not planning to do, I can't let it carry over to college football. And similarly, if I do really well in baseball, I can't let that become any level of hubris going into the college football season. It has to be two independent things. You know, whether it's part of the same bankroll or you have a separate bankroll for each sport, you just have to keep them separated, you know? And I think that was something that really bothered me early on in the college football season, is that I got so excited to dig into a different market, get a head start with that. And then when the results didn't really line up with the work that I had put in, it was very frustrating. Another thing is the week-to-week power ratings adjustment. You know, a lot of times I would kind of fall in love with some of the early quant line moves, or, you know, sort of overvalue some of the line moves that we saw during the week, and I would wind up being on teams or wanting to be on teams that were just overinflated in the marketplace. So I think I need to trust my own numbers and trust my own work a little bit more than just kind of being a slave to the market and being a slave to, you know, what happens in those 6 days between the opener on Sunday and the closing line on Saturday. I got to trust myself more. And that just, that ongoing crisis of confidence that I've talked about before, I don't know if I'll ever fully conquer it, but going into 2020, it is something that I aspire to do. And it sounds like something that you aspire to do as well. Trusting more in the work that I'm doing, as opposed to looking at the work that everybody else is doing to shape this market.
Absolutely. And I think that it's a really good point what you pointed out about when you have a bad run, then you start thinking, okay, so I'm doing something different. You know, let's get this started out. And then you have a bad week one or whatever sport it is. You have a bad run just briefly to start that. And you say, here we go again. You know, this is just wonderful. I mean, I know personally myself, it's one of the hardest things to do is, you know, when you're in a rut, to trust yourself and just keep going and not get too down on yourself. And at the same time, like you said, when you're doing really well, you don't want to just think, oh, okay, here we go. You know, I got this, because you can't get too low and you can't get too high, but it's also far easier said than done as something like that. You know, I don't know too many people who are great at that. I know some people who are full-time sports bettors that still struggle with that. And certainly it's something that everybody who is going to be serious about this needs to try to do the best they can about is trust their work. Don't get too high or too low. And I think, like you said, you know, don't look at what else is going on in the marketplace as much as what you did with yourself. I mean, you know, if you've had a good research, a good amount of time put into something, go ahead and trust that rather than seeing, you know, some steam move or some kind of, you know, move that you think may be justified. And then later in the week, you say, I don't know how much I like that one anymore. You know, if it's better, I'd rather lose based on, you know, it's something I like and it just lost than I would thinking, well, you know, somebody has a decent point on that, so I'll play it. And then at the end, I go, I didn't really like that much. Why did I play it? You know? So I think that's true. You know, trusting yourself is pretty important in this.
And I think it's also a matter too of, you know, trusting what's tangible. You know, I mean, so many people out there are modelers. You know, they spit out the numbers early in the week. They play them based on that. The emotion is taken out of it. And that's something that I think I had a hard time with this college football and really this NFL season too. I don't think situational handicapping matters in those two leagues anymore. It just, by and large, it really does. I mean, maybe Minnesota struggled last week because they were playing, you know, back-to-back road games and stuff like that. But also, the bye week helped San Francisco. They were just better prepared. Is that situational? Maybe, but that's a really extreme example. In college football, you got 6 days between games. Travel's better than it ever was. Nutrition, dietary things, all that, you know, medicine, recovery times better than it's ever been. You've got 6-7 days between games. I don't know if situational handicapping matters that much in non-extreme circumstances. I think maybe I fall back to that too much as a crutch here in the handicapping process. That's something that I want to change in football specifically going into the next season.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think situational handicapping means more in college basketball than it does in college football. So yeah, I wouldn't want to just totally get rid of it. But at the same time, I do think that some people think it's worth more than what it is in college football. So I agree that I think that, you know, just the numbers and getting the better team should mean a little bit more.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to talk college football with season win totals, games of the year, all that type of stuff. That'll probably be out in April. So, you know, not that far away at all whatsoever. But real quickly here, before we transition to the college basketball side of things, I know you've been doing some free write-up stuff over at bettersportspicks.com, and I presume if you find any other props here throughout the day, you'll write them up over there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You read my mind there. If I find some more props during the day that I like, I will put those up at bettersportspicks.com in the free members area. Right now, everybody can see that. So if you just go over to bettersportspicks.com, you can just see that for free. In the future, you'll have to have a sign up just to log in for free to see it. You won't have to pay anything, but this is something that I'll be working on more as basketball season's going on. And it's something also where you're going to be starting to see me put win totals in it at the beginning of next summer or in the spring or whenever it is that I bet those. So those will be free. I'm not going to charge anything for that. And you can go over to bettersportspick.com and sign up for the free members area. And you can also sign up for the free picks newsletter there as well.
All right, so we get into our handicapping, the hardwood segment here for college basketball. Ran a little bit longer with football than I thought. I know you've got an appointment to get to here, so we'll spend a little bit less time on college basketball than usual, but obviously the next 2.5 months is really all about college basketball for you and I on Bang the Book Radio, so we'll be able to talk a lot about that, with the exception of the Super Bowl and Super Bowl props. But we'll start with our quick hitters segment here for our handicapping, the hardwood segment. And that includes some very important injuries to keep in mind here with basketball handicapping.
Yeah, I think that is important to note also that we're going to have plenty of time to talk about college basketball. You're going to hear lots about these under the radar games and teams and things like that to where you won't hear those many other places. First of all, injuries. Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns, they only dressed 9 players their last 2 games. Both Mylik Wilson and Trajan Wesley are injured, and be careful with this team because they've been good in the past. I don't think they're very good right now. I don't think that they were that good even with those two guys. As long as those two guys aren't playing, I would certainly look to go against them or at least pass on the game, because I think Louisiana is a team where they have been better in the past. They're a bit of a name in the Sun Belt, at least compared to the other teams. And I just don't think they're very good right now. And the other injury note I wanted to mention quickly, Iowa, Jordan Bohannon out for the year. I think that really limits their upside. And C.J. Frederick, also out for a few games. You know, Garza is going to get double teamed a lot more now. Garza is a really good player. Iowa is not used to having such a good post player. Now they do. Iowa really needs some of that balance to have some good shooters from the outside. And right now they don't have that.
Well, the Louisiana one is the one I want to key in on here for just a second, because we talked on last week's Wednesday edition of the show with Greg Peterson about, you know, handicapping in conference play, some of the situational spots, some of the road spots in particular, and also just the rhythms of the schedule. And, you know, if you're in Conference USA, you know you play Thursday, Saturday. Well, for Louisiana here, only dressing 9 players, depth is an issue with that quick turnaround. You know, they don't have elevation games or anything like that in the Sun Belt, with the exception of going to Appalachian State. But depth is very important with that quick turnaround. And again, that's dressing 9 guys. That's not 9 guys playing, you know, significant minutes. That's dressing 9 guys. And 2 or 3 of those guys may not really play at all. Very important to factor that in, particularly with that second game of a tough stretch.
Yeah, I think that Louisiana is a team where they've got a couple guys that are dressing, like you said, that really they don't want to play. I mean, so really 9 players is not really what they have that they really want on the floor. So more realistically, it's like 7 guys, you know. So if you take 7 guys that you want to play and you play 2 games in 3 days, that second game of that back-to-back is going to be definitely dangerous. So look for that coming up. I don't know how long those guys will be out, so definitely check the beat writers. You can check that on Twitter, things like that. I will say, just as a side note, college basketball is so much harder to find injury information than most of these sports. So definitely you have to do some pretty deep diving.
Speaking of deep diving, we'll take a look at some regression teams here, and 2 of them are very, very deep dives, which is why I love doing this segment with you here. We start with Alcorn State.
Yeah, Alcorn State, a team that we haven't really even talked about much on the show, and we probably won't talk about too much in the future, but I did want to talk about regression a little bit for them. They're shooting a miserable 39.1% on 2-point shots, you know, not just overall on 2-point shots. They were 45% last year. They've played the 30th toughest slate of defenses so far this year. Look, they're about to play a SWAC schedule. So this is a team that plays quickly, and they're going to shoot better than that. I probably would look to play some overs with Alcorn State. And these are tricky in the SWAC because they can play pretty quickly and turn the ball over a lot and have sloppy games. But, you know, they're going to have some pretty low totals, and Alcorn State is certainly not going to keep shooting 39% on 2-pointers.
No, you would certainly hope not. And again, I mean, the SWAC, and you know, the SWAC play is what, Monday night and Monday, and then on the crowded Saturdays, I believe.
Yeah,
they are in action tonight against Grambling State, getting 3.5. Is that one on your radar here this evening?
You know, I think Grambling's one of the better teams in the SWAC. I'm not very interested in that game. Grambling plays much better defense than most teams in the SWAC. So while I do look to play Alcorn State overs, this is not a game that I'm terribly interested in.
All right, so we stay way under the radar here again, and I don't even know if people know the team names here. By the way, the Alcorn State is the Braves, correct?
Yeah, yep.
Yep, Texas A&M Corpus Christi is the next one. I'm not even sure most people know what their team name is either, but they make the regression candidate list here today.
The Islanders, right?
The Islanders, yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. There's always a few of them that I don't know, but I know most of these. Texas A&M Corpus Christi is a team that's shooting 38.1% from 3-point range. I can't imagine that's going to continue. They shot 32.3% from 3-point range last year. They have multiple guys shooting way above their career averages. Some of them were shooting in the 20%, you know, 27, 28% range, and now they're over 40%. And the other thing that I wanted to point out is this team turns the ball over on 26.8% of their possessions. You know, as a guy with some coaching background and basketball, that has to be really maddening. 27% of their possessions end in a turnover. If their shooting gets worse, look out. I mean, this offense is not good. I think that this is a good time to either look to fade or play unders with Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
Yeah, I like this one a lot here. You know, as you mentioned, they turn the basketball over a ton. They're not going to keep shooting like this. They're 335th in the country in 2-point percentage, according to Bart Torvik. And they also have the 3rd highest block percentage on offense. So they don't really have a ton of length. They got a guy who's 6'10". He's a pretty good offensive rebounder for them, but he only plays 35% of the minutes. So when they do get the ball into the interior, They're not particularly good there. And even here in their last three games against Southland competition opponents, turnover percentage over 30% in each of those three games. So when that 3-point percentage, you know, shooting starts to slack off a little bit, definite under candidate, quite possibly a fade candidate too.
Yeah, I think both of those could work out pretty well. Turning the ball over 30% of the time, it's going to be hard to win games or cover games at that kind of rate. So any kind of regression in the shooting numbers is going to hurt them really badly. The final one I was going to say as far as regression, UTSA, the Roadrunners, 119th in effective field goal percentage defense last year. They're 316th so far this year. This doesn't really make any sense. Almost all the same guys are back. They should certainly get better on defense than what they've been so far this year. I think this team is more talented than their record would indicate, and I would look to back them. This could have been a buy-low team or a follow team for the next segment as well, but I think UTSA is better defensively than what they've shown so far this year.
Well, and we're not going to talk about UTSA in the games segment, but we very well could have because they actually play back-to-back games against UTEP this week. You know, we talk about the travel partners in Conference USA. UTSA and UTEP go on the road together. One will play in one city, and the other one will follow to that city. Here this week, they play each other in a back-to-back. I believe it's even, I don't know if it's Wednesday, Saturday, or Thursday, Saturday, but that's a quirky little scheduling spot for later in the week, too.
Yeah, we'll definitely be talking some Conference USA games this year because they have that really quirky schedule that,
They reset mid-season or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're doing exactly the same as they were last year or not. I know they're doing the back-to-back thing. I think they're doing what they did last year. I'll have to look into that a little bit more in depth. But I know that there's always going to be some awkward spots when you're playing back-to-back against the same team. Last year, there were even a couple times where they played back-to-back in 2 days in a row, which really doesn't make any sense at all. So we'll see about Conference USA going forward, but I do think UTSA would be a good look, and I would rather back them than UTEP in those spots. So a bit of a look ahead there for me that I think UTSA could have some value.
All right, so we take a look here at a couple of fade and follow teams, one on the fade side, one on the follow side. Who are you looking to fade right now?
Sacramento State. We're staying way under the radar here, aren't we, man?
These are really I like it.
Yeah, they're 12-2 ATS so far this year. But Sacramento State, while they're an improved team, they're 12-2 ATS this year. They've played a very easy schedule. They're about to go on a tough road trip, play two games at Elevation. I think Sacramento State could be a good team to try to fade coming up, too. I think this is a better team than they have been, but I don't think they're as good as what they look right now.
What an interesting set of defensive statistics for Sacramento State. They're 14th in the country in three-point percentage against, 25th in the country in two-point percentage against, and 353rd in free throw percentage against, 80.7%. Obviously, you can't defend a free throw, as we all know, but that is a stunning contrast. And obviously, their free throw percentage against will go down. Teams aren't going to shoot 81% against them all year, but also defensively, and in particular, you mentioned this week, a couple of games in Elevation. Think about it. When teams get tired, what falls off? Usually the defense. So maybe Saturday at Southern Utah, a game that's going to be played at a very low number of possessions. Maybe Saturday at Southern Utah, a tough game for Sacramento State.
Yeah, I mean, I'd look to go against them in both games if the number is right there, but that second game would be my favorite one to go against them, certainly. And I think their free throw percentage defense will definitely get better. And their overall defense, when it comes to two-point and three-point defense, will get worse.
All right, so we stay under the radar again here for a follow team. And you know what? Again, you're not going to hear about these teams on most other shows. So I think this is absolutely perfect here today. The follow team up in the Northeast.
Yeah, Northeastern, the Huskies. This is a really efficient team on offense. I think this is a really well-coached team. They've lost their last two games, but I'll look for spots to back this team. They're a pretty veteran team. They're going to score at a very efficient pace in the CAA. Northeastern has a really big game coming up in their next game. But in general, Northeastern's a team that I would look to back here. I think that people may be a little bit too low on them based on a couple losses in a row here. And Northeastern, a team that is just so efficient on offense compared to everybody else in the CAA.
I like this one. You key in on the CAA a lot. You've done pretty well in that conference.
Yeah, definitely. It's a conference that I've done well in, especially with totals. But I know this conference pretty well, and I think it's one where you can find some pretty good opportunities.
All right, so we take a look at a handful of games here. We got a bunch of different games to get to. We'll kind of go through them a little bit in rapid-fire fashion. But one that's really interesting tonight, and in fact, I wrote a preview of this game over at bangthebook.com. It's mentioned in my college basketball situational spots article, Portland State and Montana. Yeah, we talk about finding situational spots here, in particular for that second game, back-to-back games in elevation here for Portland State going through the Montana double.
Yeah, you know, I want to bet Portland State here, but based on the spot, I can't do it because, you know, Montana's coming off that huge win at Eastern Washington. Now, that one was not on Saturday, so they have some extra rest, and that's one of the reasons I wouldn't want to bet this game. But Eastern Washington, one of the top teams in the Big Sky, that's a huge win for Montana. Now, I will say that Montana has really not been very good at home this year. They almost lost to Northern Arizona, almost lost to Sacramento State. They were trailing both those games late. They did lose to Montana Tech at home, which is certainly an interesting one. I couldn't lay 7 points here, but the spot's really bad for Portland State with the double at elevation. So tough game for me. I see the public is betting Portland State some here. So there has to be some sharp money on Montana for this number to go up. And I understand based on the spot, but at the same time, I feel like this is quite a few points.
Well, and this is one of those ones where, again, we've got one of those big strength of schedule discrepancies. Montana, I believe they're in the mid-50s or so over at KenPom, Portland State in the 160s. So Montana has played a tougher schedule, and maybe that shows here in some of their offensive numbers. Portland State, very good on offense, not good at all on defense. But the Big Sky, we'll talk a lot of Big Sky because I think there are a lot of good opportunities out there in that conference every year.
Love the Big Sky. Love the Big Sky. Big West, Big Sky, CAA. We're talking about some of my favorite conferences here today.
Sounds good to me. How about we go over to the A-10 here? A little bit bigger, a little bit much more high profile of a game. VCU and Dayton on Tuesday night. We all know about the start to the year for the Dayton Flyers. They're 14-2. Bart Torvik actually has them as his third best team in the country. They'll get a test from VCU here coming up on Tuesday night.
Yeah, Dayton's been tremendous. I mean, this is a Dayton team that I was thinking about it the other day. Dayton might be better than Ohio State. I mean, we talked about Ohio State last week that Ohio State might lose that game at Indiana. They did end up losing that game. Ohio State's definitely been slumping of late. They weren't as good as what people thought they were at the beginning of the year. Dayton has shot the ball so well this year. I mean, can they keep shooting this well? You know, what are they, 62% on two-pointers or something like that? This is a Dayton team that has been really good, 10-6 ATS this year. VCU has not been up to expectations, 4-12 ATS. I want to start by saying this, and I hope that we can revisit this either next week or sometime soon. Bad ATS teams versus good ATS teams this time of the year. You want to lean toward the bad ATS teams. This has been a very strong angle, really strong. We will talk about that one some more, but you know, that makes me initially inclined to lean toward VCU because usually these teams that have been really bad ATS have been thrown out. You know, people are done with them, especially if they're a team that actually is a decent team. And VCU is certainly a decent team, you know, maybe catching double digits, something like that here. This is a team in VCU that plays good defense that I would expect them to at least put a good effort in here. I will say when I looked at this game, I was trying to look for a weakness of Dayton. Dayton's weakness is post defense. They rank in the 30th percentile in the country in post defense. VCU is in the top 20% in post offense. So they would be very wise to feed the post often in this game. We'll see if they do that or not. Dayton's won the last three meetings between these two, but these games have been very, very close. I think this one, you know, Dayton's certainly the better team, and I'd want to get a decent amount of points if I was taking VCU, but that would be my lean here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at Dayton. Dayton hasn't lost a game in regulation yet this year. Lost to Kansas in overtime, Colorado in overtime, both in neutral settings. VCU, I mean, three-point losses to Purdue and Tennessee really aren't that bad. 10-point loss at Wichita State. That game was not as close as the final score would indicate. Wichita led that one by 18 or 20 through about most of the second half there. Maybe a look-ahead spot there this past Saturday at home against Rhode Island. Maybe kind of looking ahead to this Dayton game a little bit. This is one where I fully expect VCU to be getting too many points in this one. I think I probably will be on the road Rams here in Tuesday night's matchup. You and I kind of have, I guess I would say we kind of have a lot of different games that you and I are looking at here this week. One that you sent over to me here out in the Big Ten, Maryland and Wisconsin on your radar.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep my thoughts quick here, but I do have to say, is Maryland ever going to win a big game on the road? I mean, I can't remember the last time they did. This is a Maryland team that every year they have tremendous talent. Turgeon recruits very, very well. They never win a big game on the road. They never win a big game on a neutral court at the end of the year in the NCAA tournament. And until they start doing that, I'm not going to trust them. Look at what Maryland's done this year. They got to play Seton Hall without their top two players on the road and lost. And then they got to play Iowa without their top two outside shooters. They lost that game really badly. I don't trust Maryland at all. Kohl Center is still a good, great, really great home court advantage. And I think Wisconsin is certainly my lean in this one. I'm curious. I think the line might be a little bit higher than what KenPom has at -1 on Wisconsin. If it's -1 on Wisconsin, I will be taking Wisconsin in this game.
It's funny because I wrote about Maryland in my situational article for this week. And I mentioned before the game was even played, I said that they had lost to Iowa on the road just because they've gotten so predictable here, you know, with these road losses. So definitely something to keep in mind out there in the Big Ten. How about a little Horizon League love as we talk another low major here? Detroit and Wisconsin, Milwaukee, another game on your radar.
Yeah, I think this is a fascinating handicap. Detroit beat Milwaukee twice last year, despite being really, really bad last year. Milwaukee coming off a huge road win at rival Green Bay. Would you consider this a letdown spot for them since they just beat their rival, or are they up for this game because they lost to Detroit twice last year? I think that's fascinating because, I mean, I think you could make the argument for either one of those. Milwaukee's been bad at home this year. Narrow wins over IUPUI and UIC. They lost to Western Michigan, Eastern Illinois at home. Antoine Davis is the best player on the floor here, and it's not very close. So I would certainly lean Detroit plus the points in this one.
One that I had on my radar, an interesting little spot here in the WAC. Again, talking a lot of low major conferences here. Cal State Bakersfield goes out to UM Kansas City and then plays Chicago State. They play UMKC Thursday night at 6 o'clock local time, then Chicago State Saturday at 12. We know Chicago State's awful, but that's two games in 36 hours, a long way from home for the Roadrunners.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit that this is not one that I'd be excited to bet. You know, I mean, this would be a hard one to take. But at the same time, if you get a big enough price, it doesn't matter what the team is. You know, if you get enough points and they're in the right spot, you have to bet that side. So it would be the ultimate hold your nose bet. But if I had to take a side here, I'd take Chicago State in that second game, especially if Bakersfield plays a real tight game against UMKC where it takes a lot out of them.
Well, and that's something, too. And I mentioned this in the intro to the article both last week and this week. You can look at things, you know, over the course of the full week and say, okay, this is a spot that makes sense. But a lot of spots in college basketball just pop up because, you know, you might get a double overtime game and then you play 36 hours later. Like if Bakersfield goes overtime with UMKC, Chicago State's awful, but I mean, that's still a really terrible spot.
Right, right. A lot depends on what happens during the week. And that's why we try to preface that, you know, in what we say here is that depending on what happens between now and that game, you know, this could be a great spot or it could be not as great a spot. You know, if Bakersfield were to lose badly in that game against UMKC, I don't know that I'd want to go against them in that second game.
Well, I don't think it matters at all what happens during the week in the lead up to this game. Louisville and Duke on Saturday, part of a massive college basketball Saturday. They don't have to go up against the NFL anymore, which means a lot of money will be flowing into the betting market on Saturday. Louisville and Duke, your early thoughts here as we're several days in advance of the game.
Well, first, my first thought is Chris Mack's a really good coach. I think that he's probably still underrated by some people. Louisville not quite as good at point guard this year. I don't think they've been as consistent. Kimball is a bit of an unknown. He turns the ball over a little bit too much, certainly has potential. This is a really good Louisville team, though, certainly. I remember the lead Louisville blew last year at home against Duke, and when you sent me this game, I assumed that that was part of the reason you wanted to talk about this game. I think Louisville will certainly be very up for this game. The one thing that's a big problem for Louisville in this game to me is they can't match Duke's length. Louisville's not actually a very tall team compared to a lot of the top teams in the country. So I would say this is a hard game for me to bet. I want to bet Louisville. I don't know if it's a great matchup for them. I'm wondering if you have any lean on this one.
No, I think it's tough because, again, I mean, you know, Louisville looked so good early on, had some impressive performances. the big loss to Texas Tech is questionable. Getting blown out at home by Florida State is questionable. I kind of wonder what this team's current ceiling is. And again, you mentioned the point guard play. Guard play is so important in college basketball, in particular in these hostile road environments like Louisville is going to be in on Saturday. It'd be tough for me to take Louisville here unless I was getting a pretty healthy number.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, if you have any question marks about guard play and then you go to play a place like Duke, where Duke is really good defensively this year too. And I think that that's a bit under the radar for some people. They're fourth in defensive efficiency. Duke's just as good on defense as they are on offense. So, and they force a lot of turnovers. So I think that this could be one of those spots where it wouldn't shock me if Duke won big here, but I'd hate to lay 9 or 9.5 points also.
Well, and it's not like there's any equity really on Duke to win the national championship or anything like that. But when we get to the ACC tournament, if you've got a really young team playing very good defense early on in the year, you know they're only going to get better at whatever areas or weaknesses for them, especially with somebody like Coach K. I always worry about young teams at these major programs playing defense early on. If they start playing defense, they're real scary the rest of the way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Duke has usually had some issues the last few years with not being very good on defense quite a ways into the season. That's not been the case this year. So definitely a dangerous team.
Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. We talked about Better Sports Picks. What's going on over at the other site?
Yeah, at huntersportspicks.com, I am lowering the prices here later today for college basketball, the rest of the season, and the NBA pass. Also have a basketball, all basketball pass that I'll be lowering the price for. I've done fairly well here in the NBA so far this year. College basketball, as we've talked about, has been disappointing so far. Definitely not because I don't put enough effort into it. And I have to tell you, I'm getting a little bit tired of these. Actually, I'm getting more than a little bit tired of these unders losing in overtime. So far this year, I've had 10 unders lose in overtime, and I haven't had a single over win because of overtime. So Syracuse and Virginia on Saturday, 43-43 going into overtime, and then I lose the under. That one was a backbreaker.
Well, make sure you follow Kyle on Twitter at KyleHunterPicks and check out both huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. Kyle, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Take care, man.
There you go. There's Kyle Hunter again, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline here about the NFL playoffs, NHL, and also this week's golf tournament. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.